honor and a privilege to be present here with you this evening in this capacity as leader of the evening meditations and devotions. We have been here but a short time, just 1 week, and we are just beginning, I'm speaking of my wife and I, beginning to unwind and sort of fathom the deep mysteries of the hold of the Spirit. There is a movie following, according to our gallant leader and commander, and as he announced the theme for it, I couldn't help but think of the last time that I heard a sermon that was to be preached on this subject. And the man was typical Luther. He had his 3 points, and it was this: the devil who he is, the devil where he is, and the devil what he is. Now, I hope that this picture will bring forth the fulfillment of these 3 thoughts. I've learned several things since we came in here. The one is that there's a lot of good at home. And we are absorbing it both consciously and unconsciously. And I know that we are going to take it with us, and it is going to be not only a cherished memory, but it is going to be a motivation and an inspiration for us through the years. But I've also discovered that there are certain things that a person has to be very careful of and take quite literally or possibly employ. You perhaps remember the very fine illustration and the beautiful admonition that was given to us this morning through our head. He spoke, for instance, of the lovely dogs that we have and the new one that has come into our midst. There's Whitey, and there's Bertie, and there is Blackie, and how affectionately they approach each other. And as they do so, they come up to one another and they stick out their nose and they begin to sniff at each other's and as the sign of their friendship. Well, I felt a little guilty after his talk this morning, and I thought I ought to try to correct some of my evil ways, because sometimes I discover that I'm a very unsociable being, especially as far as the commonplace attitude toward my wife is concerned. So, as I came back to the chalet again, I did it very literally, and I came up to her, and I did what we were admonished to do. Well, what I want to tell you is that I've been in the doghouse all day. Very closely related to the scripture lesson that was just read, the parable of the prodigal. I would like to call for the showing of hands. How many of you have read the famed sermon or lecture entitled The Acres of Diamonds? Let me see the hands, will you please? 1, 2, 3, 4. That's very good. Generation ago, a very fine speaker who was covering the Chautauqua circuit wanted to establish a school in Philadelphia. He wanted to build a Christian college. He didn't have the money, very much like Holden Village. And he set out to do so by preaching a single sermon or a single lecture. And it was entitled The Acres of Diamonds. Russell H. Conwell, the founder of Temple University in Philadelphia, Now, the background for this talk is he traveled down the Tigris, or along the Tigris-Euphrates Valley on camelback. And his guide that led the camels was an Arab from Baghdad. And as they jaunted along through the day, and as they fought for the rest, this Arab started visiting with the convo. And he told them a very interesting story, a parable. It was that of Ali Hafez. He was an ancient Persian. He lived very much near the Indus River. I don't know whether I'm supposed to stand on this sand, or I'm supposed to stand back here, I'm supposed to stand on the soft part here, but the maybe I can just move. I think this is perfectly fine.
I have a couple of calls to move it forward, just to put it. Now, someone tried this today as a new arrangement, and it's fine to give you some room.
This is just fine. Mother Kalmok said about his parents when I get back that sometimes they get in the way here. He's a neighbor of ours, a very close friend of ours at the North Bay. Coming back to his parents. There's Ali Hafez, this ancient person, Persian, living near the Indus River, was a very wealthy farmer. And in those areas, the wealth was determined by the amount of acres that they had, amount of land that they had, and grain and fields and gardens, and he was quite wealthy. He was contented because he was wealthy, and he was wealthy because of the fact that he had learned the deep secret of the being content. And one day, a very wise Buddhist priest came by his place and visited him and decided to stay overnight. And in their conversation together, he told this farmer about some of his wisdom with regard to the universe. He told of the marvelous way in which things had been created, the way that originally there was a mass and then the rain fell and it began to be solidified. And there came forth earth and stone and copper and silver and gold, and above all the things, the beauty of the diamond. He explained that a diamond was a congealed drop of sunlight. And one diamond, he told his farmer, the size of the thumb, would buy him an entire county. And if he would be fortunate in discovering the mine of them, he would become extremely wealthy so that his sons could be placed upon the thrones of nations, and he himself would become a tremendous influence. And this did something to Ali Hafez. That night, he went to bed. He was a poor man. Became very discontent. And within him, as he tried to sleep but could not, there were resounding these words, "I want diamonds. I want diamonds above everything." He laid awake the entire night, and he was thinking about it. And so the next morning, the inevitable question that he placed to the priest was this: where do I find them? And so the priest told him the secret. He said, you go out, you travel, and you find a river someplace that is embedded in white sand with huge mountains on either side, and there you will find the diamonds. And this is exactly what Ali did. He sold all of the presets. He set out in search of this place and of the coveted stones. He traveled to the world that was known in his day. He finally came to the city of Barcelona in Spain. And there as he watched a tidal wave sweeping in over the shores, he was tempted to go out and to become a part of it and to destroy his own life. Now, this was the end of the story. But not as far far as the Buddhist priest was concerned, he came back to visit this farmer again. He didn't know that he had sold everything and left. And he found a stranger that had purchased it and was living there in his place. And as he entered into the familiar house, he noticed a stone on the mantel that looked rather unusual. And he examined it, and he discovered that it was a diamond. Together they rushed out into the garden and started digging. They found one diamond after the other. And this is the way in which the famed diamond mine of Golconda was discovered. It came to be even richer than the Kimberley mines of Africa. And the great Queen and the Orlock stones and the crown jewels of England and of Russia, the largest on earth, came from this mine. Now, let's just retrace our steps a little bit. Because in this story lies the message. There was contentment with what this man had acquired. There was the natural lure within each and every one of us. The lure for power. And it's interesting to notice how close this is to the temptation that we find of Christ. And the natural thing is, of course, in these daily experiences, to dispose of that which we are dissatisfied. In other words, to sell out, go out in search of something new. We discover before we realize it, amongst these are spiritual values, our Christian standards, the virtues of Christianity. The next urge is to get out. Travel. Some of you may have read the novel Run, Baby, Run. Parts of it are not so very pleasant. But it certainly is typical of what is taking place amongst people today. Then all of a sudden we begin to discover that we're not only in strange territory, but we've left behind everything that we've had. We've gotten nowhere. And perhaps we've lost everything that we have. And then follows the frustration, the desperation, the tragedy. Whereas, as we look back together at the prodigal, we see the old habitations, the greatest riches that man can know. And so we begin to ask ourselves, in light of what we have today, what price? What price in this new society for home and family that must be sacrificed for the steps that we are taking? What price of our living standards according to our Christian beliefs? Even what price of freedom that I have come to possess? What price the religious faith that has motivated the liberty that has set man free? The education that has raised us from darkness to light? The economic progress that has become the envy of the world? The morality and the spiritual power that stands as the only wall today between us and the downfall to our degeneracy? What price spiritual wisdom and power whose values are immeasurable and eternal? What price Jesus Christ, the way of life, the eternal home, the eternal hope? And these are the values that have so oftentimes today become the aged, the outworn traditions. that we are willing to sell for a mess of porridge, to lose ourselves in this subtle, amazing, elusiveness of something unknown bad. I want to close with a stanza of a man that I have respected through the years. He now passed away. He is the poet from the South, known primarily as the Southern Poet, namely Sidney Lanier. And amongst his poems is this one entitled The Crystal Christ. And he tells one of his personal experiences. And one night, he couldn't sleep. It was midnight and past as he went out to the beauty and the glory of the night that Carol reminds us of so frequently. When in his own word, darkness clears the vision that by day is sunlight to truth. And as he sits there in darkness, he begins to see visions. The visions of the passing great of history. There is Father Homer, as he puts it. There's Buddha. There is Dante. There's Milton. There's Tennyson. And all that characterizes in this way are great. But in each one, though emblazoned with a total luster, there is some defect, some hyeneous fret of the flesh upon his shining cheek. But then of a sudden, there stands before him the image of Christ. And on the image speaks the confession of a bleeding soul that has caught the true vision of his divine glory in these words. But thee, O sovereign seer of time, but thee, O poet's poet, wisdom's tongue, but thee, O man's best man, O love's best love, O perfect love in perfect labor it, O all man's comrade, servant, priest, and king, whatever yet, what mole, what flaw, what lapse, what least defect, what shadow of defect, what rumor patterned by an enemy of inference loose, what lack of grace, even in the torturer's grasp, or sleeps, or deaths. Oh, what a mess. May I forgive him today. Jesus, good paragraph, thou crystal Christ. May we join together in the singing of hymn number 575.